RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
It's Thursday, which means Money Talks here at RCR, and Farzan Irani is back with us. Hi, Farzan. Great to have you back.
Hey, good morning, Paul. I'm excited to be back, mate. Thanks for having me.
Okay, quite a bit to talk about here. I want to start off with the Depositor Compensation Scheme funding strategy, which has been published. We've talked about this before, and I think we've had this scheme in New Zealand before. Treasury has published the inaugural funding strategy for the incoming Depositor Compensation Scheme, the DCS, which is scheduled to be implemented mid-2025. The funding strategy, or statement of funding approach, provides estimates of the costs of the DCS over the next 5 years and sets out the strategy for funding these costs and liabilities. All right, you take it from there, Farzan. What does it all mean?
Well, we've talked about this for a year, mate. New Zealand and Israel are the only two OECD countries don't have a deposit guarantee. The New Zealand government took it off after 2011 during the GFC because of pressure. They put one in place. And what's happened now is obviously people are seeing what's happening around the world. New Zealand's under pressure to have a deposit compensation scheme just in case one of our banks goes under. And we've talked about this a few times now, that they were looking at a $30,000 deposit guarantee, and now that's up to about $100,000. But it's always just been in the process. And what they've done is they've now come out with a firm plan to fund this deposit guarantee, which will supposedly take action since mid-2025, which is next year, mid. But what they call is the SOFA, which the acronym they used, SOFA, Statement of Funding Approach. How are they going to fund this? Obviously, they're going to, as we've spoken before, they're going to charge the banks for paying a premium based on the deposits that they have. But I want to read something out here. The SOFA sets a target fund size of 0.8% of protected deposits, which will be built over 20 years and funded by levies paid by deposit takers, which are being developed by the Reserve Bank. So the Reserve Bank is setting up levies. But the two important parts in there, mate, is the fund size is going to be 0.8% of protected deposits. So,
that's hardly anything in my reckoning.
Exactly. And it's going to take them 20 years to even get there. So
anything that happens in the meantime, there's no money for it.
Yeah. So what they're telling is this is why I think average people just need to get pissed off at the government and say, hey, listen, can you just get on with it and place a government guarantee like other countries have? Because depositors might do a bank run, and even a bank that might not be in trouble might get into trouble because people are just not sure about their banks, right? 0.8% of protected deposits. What is that telling you, mate? $1 for every $100 you have?
Yeah.
And it's going to take them 20 years to get there? So, and it's going to be operational from 2025. So next year, mid-2025. So by 2045, they'll get us to 1% of protected deposits. Keep in mind, we've talked about inflation. In 20 years' time, that $1 would be worth 30 cents.
Is there any point in doing this with these numbers?
Not with these numbers, no. It just doesn't make any sense, mate. But I also want to read out a few other things because this is what had initially come out. Because they keep saying the shareholders will take the first. So I've mentioned before, in addition to this depositor compensation scheme, there's this thing on the Reserve Bank of New Zealand's website called the OBR, which is your open bank resolution, which says, hey, we just want to help you, our citizens. So if a bank is in financial trouble, what we're going to do is, instead of just liquidating and shutting everything and no one having access to their funds, what we're going to do is we're just going to shut it for the day. And the next morning, people can have access to their funds. And in that, what they're trying to say is the first hit will be shareholders, which I mentioned quite a few times now on this radio chat. Look at the European banks, see what's happening with Credit Suisse and all that stuff, or even your Silicon Valley Bank. The next one will be preference shares. And the third one will be customers with deposits in line. So that is the scale of it, is essentially telling you. And what they'll do is they'll let you have a little bit of your money the next morning. And what they're trying to do is, if you have big sums, and again, first of all, this SOFA is not going to have enough to cover most people's deposits. So what they're trying to say is, hey, if you have 100,000, we'll let you use 5,000 so you can wake up in the morning and go about your business. I'm not saying 5,000, I'm just giving you an amount. Example, they'll work that out when the bank fails, how much they'll let you use of your own money, but they'll unfreeze 5,000 So the default is to freeze everything. And the next morning, they might give you 5,000 to use so you can go to an ATM, buy a cup of coffee, and all that kind of stuff. But the remaining 95,000 might be frozen till they decide wow. everything's in line. So there's a bit of information out there, mate. And this is what I'm saying. It's taking them so long, and they still keep coming up with these silly numbers, 0.8% of protected deposits.
What is what do you think the rationale is behind that figure? Because there's no... That's not confidence inspiring in any way, I would have thought.
Yeah, no, it's not. But again, you've got to keep in mind the average person, how much money they have in their bank account.
Yeah.
So they're trying to please the plebs, as you would put, because what they're trying to say is, look, we've got 70%, 80% of the population covered. Not everyone has $1 million in their bank account. They might have 10, 15, 20. And if you have 20 and they let you use 5, you might be like, yeah, it's all good. But this is where we're heading, Matt. I can actually read through some of the points as well, but they say how the OBR would work through the phases. The first phase is the imposition of statutory management. Second stage is closure of access channels and freezing liabilities. So what that means is access channels, as in you can't use your ATM or your internet banking, and they'll freeze liabilities. Liabilities is the bank's liabilities, so your assets, your deposits, your money. Freezing a portion of pre-positioned customer accounts, and freezing all other creditors' claims in full. This is going to be an overnight process. Sorry. Bank reopens for core transaction business and allows customers to access the non-frozen portion of their funds the next morning. Release of an equivalent portion of all other liabilities in due course. Who knows how long that takes. And the release of additional frozen funds, if available, following more accurate assessment of
losses. If available. Okay.
So they might freeze 90% of your money, and by the time they figure it all out, you might get some of it back. You might not. But look at, I would say, I speak a lot to my clients about what's happening in other parts of the world, what's happened in Cyprus in the past, where people weren't allowed to access their own funds. Banks customers' deposits were bailed in. So this is just a sign of the times coming.
Okay. ASB economists, and this is from interest.co.nz, ASB economists say they hope that households will base their future decisions on a more realistic outlook for household incomes, house prices, and borrowing costs. They go on to say that the economists at the ASB expect a modest household spending and housing market recovery in 2025. Well, don't know about that. And hope households have learnt a thing or two. ASB senior economist Mark Smith says the hope is that households are now basing their future decisions on a more realistic outlook for household incomes, house prices, borrowing costs. They're kind of wagging the finger a bit, it seems to me, at people, because in 2020 and 2022, when they say there was a consumer spending and housing market binge, most of that was during the COVID period, where money was everywhere and interest rates were on the bottom floor, right?
We're exactly right, man. They're pointing fingers at us, the citizenry, and saying it was your fault. It was your fault you borrowed so much money.
They didn't have to lend it, by the way, did they? They didn't
exactly
have to
right.
lend it.
Exactly right. And this is a bank economist telling you, hey, listen, I hope New Zealand households learn their lesson. Hey, how many times we could all point the finger at the banks and say, hey, have you not learned your lessons? Have you not learned what happened in the global financial crisis? House prices don't just go in one direction. Could you have not seen this coming? Since you're the banks, you're the protectors of our deposits and our hard-earned money, could you not have done more responsible lending? Why in Australia did they have to have a Royal Commission to banking? And I think in New Zealand, they're talking about one recently. Why do we have to keep an eye over them when they're the ones who we trust with our money? And they're pointing the fingers at citizens. Hey, hope you learned your lesson. You shouldn't have borrowed so much.
You're going crazy.
Exactly right.
I was talking to Squirrel Mortgages head David Cunningham a few weeks ago, and we were talking about negative equity, and the Reserve Bank, trying to squeeze inflation out of the system by keeping interest rates high. And it occurred to me, and what do I know, Farzan? So I get to ask you. So that's great. In the end, it's not the spending on mortgages, which is a regular weekly or monthly payment. The people who are paying their mortgages aren't necessarily going out and having consumer spending binges. I'm just wondering if the cost of money should go up for mortgages, because if you put the interest rate up and you double it or even more than that, which has happened, you know, people are just going to go, a lot of people are going to go into near hardship. They're watching their money. And we know that from the data and what is being reported. So just to hammer the poor old homeowner all the time, they take the hit most of all, don't they?
They are taking the hit. Exactly, exactly. And that's the point. Mate, obviously, most of these economists are also saying, oh, people who bought towards the end will be negative equity, which we know. We've spoken about it quite a few times. They are going to be negative equity because house prices have been dropping. And yes, what they're trying to say, well, the central bank, as I mentioned this quite a few times, the central bank is saying, if we induce enough hurt on people, inflation will come down. But as I've tried to explain a couple of times, there's your tradable inflation and your non-tradable inflation. Tradable inflation, which I've said, which are your commodities, which are coming into the country. Inflation there has gone down, and that is why inflation is coming down a little bit. But the non-tradable, which is running, circling in the New Zealand economy, isn't coming down fast enough. So their explanation is, if we put enough pain on companies who will then lay off their staff, who will then have less money to spend because they're unemployed, and because if there's 40 people who are applying for the same job, the employer will get them at a cheaper rate. So this is how it all circles down into a downward spiral, and we'll get inflation down. So they are saying openly that we're intentionally trying to hurt the economy. Well, not they won't say that. We're trying to intentionally make slow everything down. But as you just said, it's only the upper echelons of society who might have 80-90% equity in their houses, who might use some equity in the house to buy a new car. But the average person is suffering. The average person is struggling because they took on debt. And again, the average person is not financially astute. That's why on this Money Talks, we try and share a little bit so people can open up their eyes to what is happening and not get themselves into these kind of things again and again. Because it's a game of musical chairs. So stay out of debt or reduce your debt. But the average person is getting hurt. Just Paul, just to give you an idea, we've talked about this even over the last 2 months about how much the economy is hurting, and 80 to 85% of the economy is hurting. I'll just give you three or four bullet points for you to tell me if any listeners of ours doesn't think the economy is in trouble. Okay. So the volume of companies saying they're laying off staff suggests unemployment's rising. Currently, the unemployment rate is 4.3%, or 134,000 people as of March. Okay, so that's the unemployment rate. As you mentioned, they want it up to about 5%. Some economists are saying by next year it'll be up to 6%. And we talked about this. That's 250,000 KVs out of jobs. I've read a SEEK report which actually says that the amount of job ads have gone down tremendously. And for every ad, there's so many people applying. It's getting ridiculous. The second point is they're saying how many firms, the survey from which I'm reading, the credit bureau Centrix says company liquidations in May were the highest for a May month in a decade, okay? So this is like your Centrix is the credit bureau. When you apply for a credit card or a home loan, it has a credit search behind. Company liquidations this May, just 2 months back, were the highest in a decade. The value of new residential building construction were consented, fell $3.3 billion in the year to May, okay?
Wow, that's
the average, yes. I'm just giving you a strain of all this data, right? Average asking price of a home listed for sales keep falling, and the volume of properties listed for sale keeps rising. That's one thing we know that's attached to the property market. And the last thing is retail spending fell for a fourth consecutive month in May, which we've also talked about the retail spending. Core and non-core services. Now you tell me, anyone, just through these four headlines, can't you tell the economy is in trouble?
Yeah, how desperate is it? Or how close are we to a desperate situation, do you think?
Well, it's not desperate, Matt. As I said, most people will make sure their mortgage gets paid first. Some of the problem with this is also, they don't take taxes into account in inflation. They don't take your mortgage payments into account. They don't take your basic stuff into account. So your insurances are going up. You have to insure your house. You have to pay your rates. All of this is attached just to the roof over your head. And that is the biggest part that's hurting. How many people have had insurance premiums go up? But now that we don't have any floods, and insurance companies are making massive profits, believe it or not, right? So insurance companies have made massive profits. Why aren't your premiums going back down? Remember how I told you, once something's gone back up, it's very difficult for them to bring it back down because it's now fixed in human psychology. And this is where the Reserve Bank is also struggling, because they just have one blunt tool to fix everything, interest rates. the dial to turn it up and the dial to turn it down, and it doesn't work because we're human beings. We make emotional decisions. We don't just make a numeric decision just based on an interest rate.
All right. Inland Revenue has data, apparently, which enabled it to identify 227,000 unique crypto asset users in New Zealand, undertaking around 7 million transactions, a value of $7.8 billion. And the piece I'm reading here, which you've sent me, there's a potentially sizable sum of tax on the line here. So what's Inland Revenue going to do about that, do you think?
The government is in trouble. The government needs more money. They're saying, I'd go out and start bloody taxing people more and start investigating people more. In other words, Inland Revenue is saying as values have recovered of these crypto assets, that means taxpayers can't plead poverty anymore. Hey, front up and pay their taxes due on your profits. Obviously, they're going after crypto assets. Some of my customers will know. Yes, people invest in different asset classes. Some of my customers know, and I've had personal conversations with them. Be careful about being in crypto assets, because when the CBDCs come, you will be in trouble. They will find new legislation. China, India have banned it. Obviously, they don't want competing currencies. Nigeria has tried their CBDC, but more people use other different private cryptocurrencies there. So every country has a different dynamic, but in Western democracies, they will come down hard. For now, what they're doing is, because they're not banning it yet, because they don't have the CBDC ready, they're saying, hey, front up and pay tax on it. You made a profit. You bought something. Let's say you bought Bitcoin for 10 and now it's 40,000. I'm just giving a number. I know it's not 40. It's a lot higher.
Yep.
But that's a profit you made. So you got to pay tax on this. And this is also, while the going is good, they take a tax. This is also what I mentioned, I think, a few weeks back, where I talked about the capital gains tax being introduced in Canada and the USA, where I think in the US it's 44%. Now, if you pay capital gains tax on an asset that's gone up, let's say Bitcoin is 50,000. I'm just giving a number. I know it's not, but let's say it's 50,000. You pay tax on that because that's your profit, because you bought it at 1,000 and you pay tax on the 49,000. Now, they've taken the tax on that, but next year, Bitcoin sitting at 20,000, they do not give you the tax back and you cannot claim that against tax. So they're talking about taking a capital gains tax in advance as well. Most of these countries, where some organizations and some people actually have to start selling some of their assets just to pay the bloody tax. It's unrealized capital gains that they want to tax as well. So if you bought a house, there's an old lady, let's say, for example, living on the North Shore in Auckland, and she bought a house for $100,000 and now it's worth $2 million. Let's say if it passes on to her kids, and this happens in India as well, you have to pay a tax when you pass on, even to your own family members. And I know European countries are talking about this in big detail. If you pass it on to your kids in the future, and Australia is also in the loop on this one, they want to tax it. So, hey, it's $2 million. Your mom had bought it for $100. There's a $1.9 million profit. You need to pay this much tax. Now, instead of the kids inheriting a property, they actually bloody have to sell it just to pay the government tax and then take the difference of whatever's left over. So, as I said, this is a process between now and the next few years. They're going to clamp down more. And once CBDCs are introduced, there's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to hide, and they will take taxes whenever they feel like, out of your bank account, and there's nothing you can do.
There's something very wrong about taxing unrealized gains, because it's like the money system. It's paper. Nothing exists.
They're taxing a dream. They're taxing something that's unrealized. You haven't made a profit on it, but they want to put your hand, as I said, my government wants to put a hand in your pocket at every stage they get. A government is just a burden on society. If I'm being honest, I've mentioned this quite a few times. Government has just grown and grown and grown all over the world, this is. And right now, the private sector, see, this is what I keep saying. The private sector produces something, okay? When you go and manufacture services, you're producing economic growth for the country. That economic growth gets taxed by the government to then just swindle or spend in the economy as they see fit. The government is actually a public servant. That word, public servant. Remember, we don't use those words anymore. Why? The government is a public servant. Our taxpayer money is paying their salaries, but they're the ones consuming the wealth after taxing us, and they spread it out into the economy as they see fit. And when that's not enough, they go and borrow more, which is a burden on the future taxpayers, because the government's now gone and spent more than they actually had through tax to spend in the current moment based on future tax income. It's just, it's a rigged game, mate. And this is what I said. All governments will collapse between now and 2032. And then we have a way of maybe rebuilding this whole system again. It's a 100-year process.
And more and more, I'm starting to think that, I mean, I don't want to talk about great resets, you know, for obvious reasons. But, you know, at some point, something has to give. Because the quality of spending that we keep hearing about all the time, particularly lately, but probably for a long time, of government spending is shocking. It's crap. A lot of it's crap, you know. And here they are, fingers or hands in our pockets, every opportunity. Like we're sort of, I don't know, just donkeys. You know, they use us to carry around money that they can reach into our pockets and grab at any time. Anyway, I won't rant on about that. But
no,
I think-
but you're right. You're absolutely right, Paul. This is what I want people to understand, that the government is, and this is why I mentioned previously, the government is a leech on society. It doesn't do anything, okay? It actually doesn't do anything. It's a private sector that produces anything. The government just taxes us to then bribe a certain part of the population with promises and redistributing wealth. That's what government does, redistributes wealth. It takes from the rich or the productive part of the economy and hands it out to the unproductive part of the economy by promises to win votes. Do you understand what I'm trying to say, right?
Yeah, no, I do.
Now, that's just the business model, mate. So there's nothing wrong with it. That is the government business model. But the governments have grown bigger and bigger and bigger. If their tax receipts are 100, they should spend 70, and then you have a budget surplus. So you have $30 left over for when the economy is not doing well to spend into it. But even during good times, as we've seen, governments have been just opening up their wallet, just spending and making promises. And that's why, as I said, in COVID also, they could just ask people to stay at home because they created $53 billion out of thin air, which caused inflation.
Which we are liable for, you and me and everybody else. And then when the good folk, the heart and soul, turn up at Parliament and say, stop screwing with our rights, they give us the fingers. Yet they're reaching into our pockets, grabbing the money.
It's just because the population is asleep at the wheel, because you had your Netflixes, you have your sports. Yes, and now people are starting to wake up when they see inflation. And as more people, like even people who are listening to Asia, now they're connecting some dots and going, okay, this is how it works. This is how we get the free healthcare. This is why they're giving us free dental and all of that, because it's our money. We're being taxed. And as I mentioned, Matt, it's a business model. Let me just bring you, I just want to slow this down for our listeners to understand the business model. Just whenever you think of anything, think of the business model. So I've talked to you about the business model of the government. Tax the citizens, try and spend it into the economy. If there's not enough, take on more debt with the promise of future taxpayers, okay? And if the debt gets too much, countries default. Think about a hotel business model. What is a hotel's business model? Let's say I have 1,000 rooms and I want to, well, there's no point in me having just 100 rooms full all the time. I want to keep 1,000 rooms full. So I either offer a discount or something along those lines to keep it full. That's how I make a profit. Now think COVID. What is a hospital business model, mate? Compare a hotel with 1,000 beds, and there's no point having just 100 beds full, right? A hotel needs to fill up the beds. A hospital has 1,000 beds. There's no point if there's not enough sick people and I only have 100 beds. So a hospital business model, it actually needs more beds full. Think back COVID. Think back what is happening.
Right.
What is, so hospital, it's a $1.5 trillion industry globally. It needs more sick people.
Yeah.
Big pharma. It's needs what? New diagnosis. So it can sell more prescription medicine. Military contractors. What do they need? They need more war. They don't like peace. NATO is not a peace organization, let's be honest. And the mainstream media. What do they want? They want more their business model. They need more controversy. They need more chaos. They need more conflict. So think about the business model.
I get it.
I've just given you simple examples. If you're healthy, big pharma doesn't do well. If you're not sick, hospitals don't do well. If there's no war, what do military contractors do?
Yeah.
And mainstream media, if the world is going just fine, are you going to pick up the newspaper and read all the
or click
stuff
on the story? No.
Exactly, mate. So just understand a business model.
Yep, I understand. Time is tight. I want to go overseas just to finish off. Latest US jobs data proves the skittishness of many Fed members, the headline on the story. They talk about a news article and they say that on the surface, the increase in employment looked all right, but they say it pays to look beyond the headlines. And you've highlighted this. The historical adjustments to the original announcements are so large it makes a complete mockery of the efficacy and accuracy of the payrolls data as a reliable measure of employment trends. So where's the truth?
There isn't. They're lying. I've mentioned this quite a few times. Governments lie about the data. They're lying about the CPI, first of all. It is much higher than what they tell us it is. But in this case, let's just talk about the US numbers, right? So they revise it down. So the headline hits, everyone's looking, share markets are looking for the payroll numbers. What's happening with employment? Oh, is the economy doing really well? So in April 2024, they said that the economy in America had 165,000 new jobs. Later, it was revised down to 108,000 new jobs. Okay, so 165,000, 108,000. This is April 2024. In May 2024, they said there was 272,000 new jobs created in the economy. It was revised down to 218, another 60,000 less than the actual number was. And in June, it's 206. What will that get revised down to? I don't know. But can you see a trend here, which I've mentioned, is every month when this number, payroll number comes out, the government department says, oh, look, there's so many new jobs being created in the economy. Oh, share markets keep going up because everyone thinks the US economy is doing well. A month later, they revise the number down saying, oh, sorry, we made errors in these parts and these parts. Actually, that is not the real number. This is it. But a month later, are you looking at the previous month's
job
data?
No, it's not reported like the initial number. So the impression created is far rosier because you're always using the high number, which is wrong, than the corrected number, which is buried away later.
Exactly. And now if I'm a reserve bank or if I'm a central bank, I will say, hey, guys, look, there's still inflation because so many people have jobs. Okay. Now, New Zealand is a different case. People are losing jobs. And the Reserve Bank of New Zealand is saying we want more unemployment in the economy, which is much higher than, again, what they're stating. I can tell you that. So what I'm just trying to highlight is they're saying we're only increasing interest rates because there's not enough hurt in the economy. But what I'm trying to tell you is there's a lot more hurt in the economy. The government is reporting the wrong numbers. For the Reserve Bank to keep holding its interest rates, saying, look, we need more hurt. But actually, people are hurting because the economy is not as rosy as they're even telling us. I'm just highlighting again and again, don't trust the data on the surface of it. And this is a US article clearly also telling you, don't trust the government data.
Yeah. Who can we trust? All right, Farzan, we're up against time. Thanks so much for joining us again. You'll be back next week as well. So next Thursday, we're with you again. How can people get in touch with you, Farzan?
Yeah, just reach out through my website, successsimplified.life. Flick me an email. I'll be happy to have a chat, mate. Thank you.
We'll see you next Thursday.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Thank you.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio.com/email.